Hi, hello, and welcome to another episode of The Dunker Spot. We are part of 342 Productions. I am your host, Nikias Duncan, and joining me, as always, is my co-host, Steve Jones Jr. Steve, how are you doing, sir?
Feeling good, feeling great. Happy to be here, excited to be here. Thank you, Dunkers, for once again embracing your bounce. Dunker Nation, let's ride. YouTube, hi, hello. Smash that like button. Nikias, it's time to hoop it up.
It is indeed time to hoop it up. The smooth tones of Steve Jones Jr. on the pod today. Excited to hoop it up. We got a lot of basketball to talk about, a new league to kind of talk about and discuss in the second half of the pod. But first, going to bounce around the NBA side, talk a little bit about what we have seen as of late, what's caught our collective eyes here. I'd like to start with the Los Angeles Clippers. Like, I feel like I've been sprinkling in Clipper thoughts throughout the pod. Yeah, I know you have as well. It's more so been player based for me because I'm just a big Zubats fan and I will once again shout him out and what he's doing defensively. But the Los Angeles Clippers, 24-17 so far this year. They've won their last four, 22nd in offense, though that is trending up as of late. They are second in defense and over the past couple of weeks per clean the glass, the best defense in the NBA, Steve. About 3 points per 100 possessions better than the vaunted Oklahoma City Thunder defense, which remains top defense in the league overall. They've been historically good. We've talked a lot about what the Thunder have done, how much respect we have for that defense. But these Clippers, man, they just keep annoying folks, complimentary. I once again start with the defense.
Interesting use of words.
What does that mean? Yeah, where have we heard this before?
From me.
But no, interesting. But no, in all seriousness, the shell of this Clippers defense is very strong. And while I, again, remain a big fan of what Ivica Zubac is doing on the interior, they've had a bit drop. They've had him creep up to the level sometimes. He's looked comfortable out there, more comfortable than he looked last year where you saw the groin cover last season. But he's been a little bit more scheme versatile, some random late switches for him as well. Talked a little bit earlier in the year about the defensive effort from James Harden to where, again, not all defense level, but the fact that it's not just, hey, defend someone bigger because you're strong or just switch, just keep you out of rotation. They have trusted him to fight over some screens and to funnel things inside. You combine that with the collective activity of Amir Coffey's when he's in. Derrick Jones Jr. back in the starting lineup, as rangy as he is, as a helper, also able to take on tough defensive assignments. And you're able to shrink the floor and force turnovers to that degree. The Clippers are able to get some easy stuff on the other end. I've been really impressed with what they've been able to do defensively. Kawhi Leonard, back in the lineup somewhat consistently, not playing him on back-to-backs, but Kawhi starting to look more like himself defensively. And the utilization of him offensively has had made the brow raise a little bit. It feels like there are some pockets to where it is just the Kawhi show. You get to do what you want to do, particularly when they do get into some of the staggering. I think the Kawhi plus bench units have been pretty fruitful, and that has been the largest display of Kawhi, here's the ball, get some buckets, do your thing on your own time. He's looking more comfortable and, again, more like himself in the mid-range area, getting to some of those pull-ups, bullying small defenders, drawing two. That's where you see some of the cutting open up for the Clippers as well. But when he's playing with that starting unit, I like the dichotomy that him and James Harden have. It feels like it is more James, you direct. Kawhi, you can kind of take over in the second half of the clock if necessary. If we do set up an early touch for Kawhi Leonard, hey, that is James Harden one pass away, or this is Norm Powell one pass away. So it makes those touches a little bit easier for Kawhi. And they're moving him around the chessboard a bunch. It is some pick and roll for him, random use for him as a screener. They will just clear a side for him. But ultimately, it hasn't felt like a heavy burden for him offensively until we get to those second units. And even then, it's not like they've ramped it up for Kawhi Leonard to play 37 minutes a night yet. So I've liked the ramp up period for him. I've liked the usage for him. I like the way that they've spaced around him and his own usage as a spacer when James Harden has the ball, when Norm Powell has the ball, going back to Zubats, again, more so the defense for me. But he's looked better in pick and roll. The hands are better. The finishing is better. They've trusted him with more post touches. We talked a little bit about the Pascal Siakam post touches on the latest episode of the podcast when we had the great Caitlin Cooper on, more Pacers theme. But quietly up there in post-up volume this year is Ivica Zubac. Like, this is a change from last year. And I think, you know, the flashes that we saw from him last season, particularly in the postseason series against Dallas, to where poor Daniel Gafford and Derek Lively, they did not have fun dealing with Zubac to single coverage. I feel like that has empowered Ty Lue to a certain degree to allow him to get those touches. James Harden trusts Zub a little bit more. If teams try to switch against James Harden and Zubac just to kind of flatten things out, keep defense out of rotation, Zubac has proven more than capable to punish those smaller guys, get easy buckets and or get to the free throw line on top of that. And as they've kind of tinkered with the lineup, a lot of that is Kawhi focused as they're ramping up the minutes and stuff with him. Chris Dunn has been in and out of the starting lineup as they've tried to space the floor a little bit more. That's where you're seeing the offense perk up for the Clippers. So again, last 2 weeks, 11th in offense, first in defense, it's pretty darn close to that top 10 in both levels. I don't think that's going to be a season-wide thing for them. But the fact that the offense is looking better, Kawhi looking more like himself, James Harden continues to play at an all-star level, Norm Powell continues to shoot the leather off the ball and attack the basket with reckless abandon, the transition attackers look good, and this defense remains strong. It's been a fun stretch of basketball for the Los Angeles Clippers. So I want to start with a little bit of Clippers praise. They look good right now.
Well, I mean, let's stick with the Clippers. I think part of the joy of seeing Kawhi come back is understanding how important it is based on what the Clippers have built base-wise. So when you talk about Zubac is better this year offensively, he had no choice. They had to throw him the ball because teams were switching. And so if you're switching, hey, Zoo, you got to make him pay. So now you counter with how you felt earlier in the season where, hey, are they forcing it too much inside? Is he able to make him pay? And now you see against team not the Lakers, it's a switch and he's punishing it automatically. Not a second thought. I think the biggest thing when you look at the Clippers offense with Kawhi back, you see things kind of layered in a stronger way. You see Kawhi used within their movement sets. And so it builds on the start that James Harden had and the start that Norm Powell had where, okay, we start with a little bit of movement. Now it's Kawhi coming off the screen. Now, oh, we have to help. That's Kawhi. Oh, wait, that's Norman Powell that's open, drive and kick. So now they can open more things off because they have more threats. They have more pressure points they can hit, which is good for a Clippers team that has had to work and search for a lot of offense this year. I think there was a play in that Laker game where Kawhi is going to screen for Norm Powell and sees James Harden has a post-up opportunity and just points and says, throw it to him, please. So Norm throws to James Harden posts, fires a pass right to get Kawhi a three. But those are the type of plays they didn't have before because they didn't have their full unit. I think defensively, I know there was someone who was very happy that Kawhi started the game guarding LeBron, navigating a pick and roll, and then peel switching to get a steal for a brief second. You know, it felt good. I think that the Clippers defense overall, because that's been what's brought them to the dance for the most part, you can bake that in. You can count on that with multiple lineups, with the addition of Kawhi, and him not having to necessarily carry all of that load defensively, if that makes sense. He can guard certain matchups, he can switch, but you don't necessarily have him. He doesn't have to be 95% Kawhi all the time. He can fit into what they do as a team because you got Derrick Jones Jr. out there. You got Norm Powell's activity out there. You got James Harden generally willing to make the right rotation. You got Zubac behind. So as a team, I think they put themselves in a strong position. That home court advantage, it's something. The wall is something. So they're putting themselves in the right position. So I think it's a good time to look at the Clippers and not forget. I think it's easy to write them off. If you look at how you feel about certain superstars, you look at the landscape of the West, that's not a fun team to face, especially in a playoff series. I've said that for a couple of years now. I don't think I've been right but they have a stronger base, it feels like, this season, as opposed to hoping we can purely out-talent you.
Mm-hmm. Hey, Steve, you got to use the line. You're never wrong, you're just early. That's got to be the tagline.
Why? It's obvious.
Well, I guess when you put it that way, hey, listen, thumbs up emoji from over here. Just quickly on the numbers front, we was talking a little bit about the lineup versatility for the Clippers. As Kawhi's come back, James Harden, Norman Powell, Kawhi Leonard, and Ivica Zubac have now played 80 minutes together. They have outscored opponents by 47 points in those minutes. It is freaking absurd what they're doing. A 126 offensive rating, roughly a 101 defensive rating so far per PPP stats. But looking at who the fifth have been more frequently, with Derrick Jones Jr. in to complete that lineup, the Clippers are plus 54 in 34 minutes. With Amir Coffey in, that's plus 13 in 3 minutes spread across a couple of games. With Chris Dunn, it is a minus 20 in 43 minutes. The Clippers shooting 8 of 30 from 3 in those minutes. That is something that I would expect to normalize to a degree. But you know, just thinking about the spacing concerns, particularly with Chris Dunn, how teams have gotten more liberal with the help off of him. That's always kind of been the thing with Chris Dunn as a concept. I've always loved him defensively, as you can attest to, Steve. But teams are comfortable switching or just going under or if he's spaced somewhere, hey, we can help off of that guy. And as the Clippers play with a little more pace in pockets, but ultimately it is more methodical when Kawhi is in. If Kawhi and James Harden are in, they do want to piece things together. It makes it a little bit easier for Chris Dunn to be a help point in some of those situations. So just continue to monitor how they kind of splice Chris Dunn in as Kawhi continues to ramp up and it's just more consistent games for him and things like that. But overall, this is a team that's coming together. So just wanted to give them the shout out there. Any closing Clipper thoughts?
No. Well, one, I would say the when teams are still doubling Kawhi Leonard, it gets very interesting because Norm Powell ends up being the last person getting the ball on the rotation. It's like, well, I'm not sure that's what you want. So that's been a fun part to see the Clippers navigate. What else has caught your eye, Nick Eyes?
I like that. I'd say quickly, like Norm Powell mixing in those corner threes and also here's a random cut as you're trying to rotate. Now he's just at the basket getting an easy one there. It's been a fun touch. So I love you pointing that out there. As far as what else has caught the eye as of late, I am shocking for anyone that's listened to the Dunker Spot for a long period of time, but the Atlanta Hawks continuing to intrigue me. Once again, beating the Boston Celtics as they just apparently have their number during the regular season, but the Hawks on a winning streak of their own, and I continue to be intrigued by their defense. Funny enough, like offensively, you somewhat know what to expect, at least concept wise. Like this is going to be a lot of Trae Young. This is going to be a lot of Jalen Johnson. Welcome back to the lineup, Jalen Johnson. By the way, they have good secondary attackers. The bigs are going to screen and roll, and Onyeka Okongwu going to be used more as a hub. But defensively, this is a rangy group. This is an aggressive group. Like they will mix in switches when necessary. They'll have Clint to drop, but like they're not afraid to toss in a late switch for Clint. And the weak side help has always been the kind of, has always been the thing that I've been super focused in on with the Hawks. And it's very, very much been like Jalen Johnson Peel going back to last season. When they nailed that low man help or when they nailed that early rotation, this defense can make plays at the rim. They can ultimately get stops, which they just did not do enough of last year. They can get out in transition and good luck dealing with Trae Young in early offense situations. That's the formula for them. When it is not locked in, oh boy, they are bleeding shots at the rim. They are bleeding kickouts to the corners. And it's not a fun time for their defense overall. But as they've been able to nail that more consistently, like it kind of reminds me of the Pacers conversation that we had with Caitlin over the weekend, to where they're just doing the little things more consistently. Even when it's not Jalen, just having that low man help in early and rotating in a controlled manner has really helped them. It's helped them kind of deter some of those rim attempts that they were giving up early in the year as they were trying to find their footing defensively. And the rotations have been impressive. You know whose rotations I've been super impressed with over the past 3-4 games, Steve?
Who?
Trae Young. As I continue to sprinkle in throughout the podcast, the man is working on defense this year. I've enjoyed the work that he's doing, the effort he's putting in. Go ahead.
Does the man have a choice?
He doesn't. And like, I do understand there is the underlying feeling of like, hey man, you're on the court. You're supposed to play defense. You're supposed to give a level of effort. So like, I don't want to give like 6 gold stars for like doing your job on defense, but in light of what it has been and what the conversation has been, and frankly, how some of the conversation around Trae as a player overall has kind of been shaped by some of that defensive effort, I do at least want to highlight, hey, he's doing it. That's not me pleading for an all defense case for him, but he's doing it. He's doing it more consistently. He's closing out on time. He's contesting shots. He's blocking 3-pointers, which is a funny bit for me. Like the one on Jaylen Brown was not one that I had on the bingo card as he was rotating out, but that came after. I think it was Jaylen Johnson rotates super early. Want to show early help on like a mid post touch. They skip it out there. Trae Young is rotating on a string, gets out there, gets a piece of the ball, and they're out and going. It's like, okay. If Trae continues to do that, if teams try to put Trae in action, it's a show and recover or it's a switch and now we're going to get him on out of there and they can rotate well enough to make that work. That's kind of all they need. And I mentioned the last 2 weeks stat for the Clippers. The Atlanta Hawks, 4-1 the last 5, 8th in defensive rating over that stretch. A little bit of 3-point shooting luck, but ultimately it's been a super active and rangy group. They're rotating on a string. And if they're able to get stops, they can get out and run. They can get out to the early offense. And this is, I talked a lot about Trae, but, Jalen Johnson back. Dyson Daniels continues to defend at a super high level. And you can get more coverage, versatile with Onyeka Okongwu when he's in. They've tried to mix things in with Clint Capela, who has been a bit of a bounce back season for him, in my opinion, based on what we saw from him last year. And when you just have that kind of length on the wings in general, you have a better chance at shrinking the floor, and you nail those rotations. The base just feels more solid for Atlanta. And so overall, impressed with the strides that the defense is making. I'm trying to see where the offense is ultimately going to level out, because we know what kind of playmaker that Trae Young is and what kind of scorer he can be. And the efficiency has been kind of inconsistent for him this year. The three-point shooting around him has been a little up and down this year. But on the high end, the Hawks can score with anyone. The defensive base feels better. The floor feels better defensively. And now they're just a playoff team right now as of recording. I'm just trying to figure out. It's more more of me being impressed than like questioning it, but I'm trying to figure out what level this Hawks team actually is.
Well, they are 2-1 against the Boston Celtics, I believe 2-0 against the Cleveland Cavaliers, and as currently stated, 2-0 against the New York Knicks. Those would be the top three seeds in the Eastern Conference, which
seems good.
Proves that Atlanta has put themselves in space. Now, you have given this loving, glowing praise of the Atlanta Hawks. Do you know who they face tonight?
Who do they face tonight, Steve?
The New York Knicks in the Garden. So,
well,
we'll see how this feels after he releases it. But I think one of the things with Atlanta, the defense, it's more consistent rotation-wise. The tricky part that they'll have to navigate, especially in potentially a playoff setting, is do teams know these rotations are automatic? In a sense, you put yourself in a position to have more size on the court. So you can switch in other places that you want to. You feel better about what Jalen Johnson and Dyson Daniels could do matchup-wise, which allows Trae Young to fit more into a let-me-do-my-job type role, which helps. So you see, even just in the Boston game, his man, you know, Boston tries to get tricky and, all right, we're going to try and get the switch, but we're going to have the other guy set the screen, and Trae, you got to navigate. And Trae's like, I'm just going to fight over Derek White. And then now what are you going to do? Those type of moments, like that's good, positive things from him. But for every one of those, you had the scenarios where, all right, pick and roll, weak side steps right in early and ends up backdoor cut. And Jrue Holiday just didn't make the layup. But that's the give and take they're going to have. They need to find the versatility if they're going to make a playoff run. Now, it's interesting you say they're in sixth. That sixth spot is a rotating wheel, as it feels like everyone not named Cleveland, Boston, New York, Milwaukee are just going up and down the train right now. Like Indiana's 5, Atlanta's 6, Orlando's 7 right now. Mm-hmm. They have been holding strong all year long, and now Paolo has come back and things have just gone left, which is not anyone's fault. Miami's knocking the door, but you know, you have a bad week, you fall. Like the Bulls have lost 5 in a row.
Yeah.
The Pistons are at 500. Exactly.
Yeah, the East is a booger, man. Also, just a quick shout out to the Milwaukee Bucks, who are just now in that top four. Yeah, we're just here. Y'all deal with the rest of the, the standings kind of toggling, because we're not too far removed from the Bucks also just being in that grouping of teams. And so they have absolutely worked their way to a level. Giannis continues to be incredible. Not going to give deep Bucks thoughts. I figure you might have some on that front.
I am, since we're here. Before you go into whatever Miami Heatdom you want to go into here shortly. I once again would say Milwaukee doing little things. And so if you're a Bucks fan or you're trying to figure out why the Bucks are in this position, it's the little things they're doing. You have to watch them offensively to understand, oh, they're actually flowing into different things. Damian Giannis understand how to get to their shots with each other in different ways. They have a little bit of pace. They can get up and down a little bit. It's not just hoping the talent works. Giannis at the elbow is very tough for teams to deal with. You know, everyone wants to build a wall and show help. It's hard to show the help when you don't know where he's going to be at. And so when he's at the elbow with the improved mid-range, with his ability to drive, with the spacing, which is going to have Dame one pass away, and Brooke stationed on that wing. So, hey, big man, you're not low. Your help is going to be high. And we're basically even. So if I beat my man and you spin, I know where the pass is. I give Giannis credit for his passing. But you don't know if Giannis is going to fall into a handoff, attack, shoot, score. That gives them a level of unpredictability, which is nice to have for them in the half court. and it allows Giannis to get the ball a lot closer to the basket in a scenario it's not just a pure post up, and so he can see the floor and understand where the help is. So that's been fun to watch their defensive rotations. Damian Lillard seeing that Brook Lopez is switched on someone that he shouldn't be switched on, and as Nekias has pointed out, immediately starts clapping like, "Hey, we need to fix this." The thing is, they're fixing it now, so you know they're more willing to switch Brook into matchups. They're more willing to help and rotate. There are nights where those rotations aren't as solid, but the nights that they nail them, they have that level of activity to where they can protect the paint, they can fly out, they can put themselves in a good position. So I think what they're doing is building their versatility to put themselves in a position to have a run. So when you look at the top four, it's a strong Eastern Conference in that sense that if I told you any one of those four teams made the conference finals or won the conference finals, would you be surprised?
Not super surprised, no.
That's a sign of some teams that are doing the right thing. So this is probably that time of year. It's a little lull adjacent pre-All-Star break, but start to hone in on some of these teams, understand what makes them who they are.
Mm-hmm. It's good stuff, C. It's good stuff. The Damian Lillard clapping bit is so funny. Because you would think it's just a, "Hey, we ramping up on defense, like slap the floor adjacent, let's ramp this up." And it's just Dame saying, "Hey, no, go get him. Go get him right now." And so as funny as that is, like to your point, Steve, the fact that they're nailing that more consistently is obviously huge for their defense. That is, I was checking this morning, think quietly up to 11th in defensive rating now, per clean the glass. That's pretty darn good. In addition to the offensive improvements that you've mentioned, the chemistry building, the way they're able to flow more into things. You know, Chris Middleton back in, still not starting still, but back in the lineup, looking more comfortable, just kind of spearheading the second unit, pushing the pace, getting him into early offense a little bit more when he's out there. So keep an eye on the Milwaukee Bucks, folks. But shout out to Damian Lillard and the clapping to get Brook Lopez out of matchups. It's a very funny bit. Very quickly, as I have yapped quite a bit, a couple of player things. Some early intrigue with Bam Adebayo and Khalil Ware playing together. This is something that I call.
Oh, here it is. There it is, folks.
Oh, Lord.
Ding, 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 ding.
Here we go. But no, this is not something that I watched live. I had to catch up to later. Listen, Eagles-Rams was happening, and I was, you know, just very stressed individual, but that's neither here nor there. Go Birds, etc. Either way. So I catch up on the Heat Spurs game. And here's Bam and Khalil Ware out here together. Here's Khalil Ware just challenging Wimby multiple times in a row. And Wimby, to his credit, just blocking the shot like twice. I was like, okay, this is a lot of aggression from the young rookie. This is interesting. But jokes aside, those two together is something that I want to see more of. I'm not necessarily saying this is the answer yet. I just genuinely want a larger sample of this. Because you got to see some of the strengths and the weaknesses of the pairing as they got like their first extended stretch together against San Antonio. And very quickly.
Man, this man Nekias saw one attempt at inverted pick and roll, Ware fighting for his life successfully, and Bam Adebayo flying out of nowhere to get a weak side block and was like, "Sign me up." That man saw another pick and roll where Bam and Khalil Ware switched. And nothing happened. Sign me up. This man, yeah, I'm intrigued to hear the strength and weaknesses, supposedly, because I know exactly what you are.
You know what's funny? Literally in my notes are those two possessions. So read me like a book, why don't you? But as far as the strengths and the weaknesses, like I think the concept of Bam, you defend on the perimeter, you defend fours, you get to switch a lot more, while insert big here absorbs some of these tougher matchups on the interior. This isn't a new concept for Miami. Like on this very podcast, that was some of the intrigue that I had with Miami attempting to lean into more of the Nikola Jovic Bam Adebayo front court. And here's a random Pelicans game where Jovic is defending Jonas Valanciunas. I'm just like, I don't know if he's equipped for that, but I understand why the Heat are trying to do that. If he can absorb these blows and not foul, you can unlock Bam a little bit more as a roamer. Or if they are running pick and roll actions at him, he gets to switch a little bit more. You get to empower him in space, which is where he's at his best. And so not a new concept, but doing so with this kind of athletic big and Khalil Ware is interesting to me. Because like I don't think, similar to Jovic last year, like Ware's a rookie, he's not strong enough yet to deal with super beefy fives yet. He's going to compete, which I like, but not super there yet. But I like that he's getting these reps already. And again, you get to see the concept of, all right, you take on Wimby, Bam, you defend insert wing here. Harrison Barnes ran a possession where you just have Devin Vassell just outright. We turned this water off. And if y'all two are in a possession together, or in action together, rather, as Steve said, okay, y'all can switch that because you're athletic and lengthy too. If you get beat, now Bam's once again unlocked as a roamer, or if Bam's getting attacked, Khalil Ware, if he's defending a non-shooter or someone that he just feels comfortable helping off of, that's more length that you can bring at the rim. So I like the idea of the defensive versatility there. This is something that both players talked about post-game. Shout out to the Five Reasons crew, shout out Brady Hawk, posting those post-game clips, so getting to see that. But you get to see that. Offensively, I just don't know yet. Because, like, on one hand, this is Bam versus smaller players where he has grown throughout his career against smaller players on switches. This is something that I've harped on. He has gotten better at it throughout his career. So in theory, that is a mismatch for him to attack in the mid post, at the very least for him to shoot over more comfortably to get some of those mid-range jumpers. Wimby just flat out did not care about Khalil Ware when he was on the perimeter. It was nice to see Khalil not down a three, et cetera. But like moving forward, I would imagine teams are going to be comfortable roaming off of Ware to kind of muck up some of the Bam stuff against smaller matchups and just seeing what Miami does to counter that. And on the flip side, Bam being spaced, I think this is where there is a positive lens to him taking more threes this year. You can space him in the opposite corner. He's willing to take that shot if you just completely help off of him. Or on those possessions where you see Bam and Duncan Robinson spaced on the same side, you help too far off of Bam or you help too early off of Bam, it could be a swing to the corner, immediate handoff, and now you're recovering trying to get to Duncan Robinson. And if you're too aggressive closing out to Duncan Robinson, Duncan has gotten really good at that slip pass to Bam. They've built chemistry with each other over the past 4 or 5 years, and now it's Bam downhill against a rotating defense. So you can see the seeds of that, but I could also see a scenario where teams just super shrink the floor because they're not worried about Khalil Ware as a three-point shooter. They're not worried about Bam as a three-point shooter. And depending on what Miami's tempo looks like or just how well they're shooting on a certain night, it could get kind of mucky for those looks offensively. So I want to see a larger sample to see which side that lands on. That's kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, taxes and Nekias Duncan being concerned about the Miami Heat offense, just a consistent spring presence, I'll tell you that much. I think what will intrigue me or what intrigued me was as I was watching, I looked up, third quarter was starting. I was like, oh, Spo just left them in there together.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's always an indicator to me of, I like this. This might be a thing. So I would keep an eye to see if he continues to roll that out or keeps it as a package. I think defensively you saw the joy from Bam as far as, oh, I can just play weak side defense. Oh, I can abandon my man and contest at the rim. Oh, I'm not in drop. I don't have to contain the drive. I can show help and recover. This is fantastic. And this man was running the floor like a madman. So I think that's probably the fun of it. It's interesting to see that it'd be a funny bit if this pairing was really the answer the whole time, because I thought Tyler Hero and Duncan Robinson also unlocked things together, to your credit. And now, okay, we have two duos that work and this kind of fits with what we're trying to do. Miami knows who they are and they know who they want to get to. It's just figuring that part out that gets tricky for them.
Yep. I like it. And again, largest extended stretch with Bam and Ware together, 13 minutes, a plus 23 in those 13 minutes. I do not expect every night to go like that, but that is quite the loud showcase for the pairing. So keeping an eyes on that. And then just very quickly, big Nick Claxton fan here. It has just been a really weird year for him. I feel like in our opening week episode this season, I was like, hey, have you seen these Nick Claxton drives? This is kind of neat. He's getting to not only grab and go, but in the half court, he's just attacking and getting downhill. This is cool.
Would you like to provide me an update?
It has not been as fruitful as it was when I brought this up earlier in the season. But like, there's been some injury stuff with him. Like, he's been dealing with back stuff. So like, this isn't a long-term Nick Claxton is cook thing for me, but it is just kind of like, I have seen better from Nick Claxton on both ends of the floor. And as the Nets have just in general, just become a bit of a mash unit, because of the injuries and the trades that they've done, this isn't a great context for Nick Claxton either. There is some element of he has to play better with some of the opportunities that he's getting. Like, I think when he has been asked to switch, he's switching a lot less than he did last year. They've ramped up the aggression with him this year, oddly enough, which he's getting steals, he's getting deflections because he is just lengthy. He has active hands. But, like, some of the recovery from him specifically or who's behind him if the ball gets behind that trap or when he's just putting two on the ball, it gets dicey for the Nets defense. So, like, those possessions just haven't been fruitful for Brooklyn overall. But even when he's been asked to switch and he's being directly attacked, it hasn't been as successful as it was last year. I feel like he's getting turned a little bit more. He's biting on a little bit more fakes. Recovery hasn't been as great. Some of the chase down blocks that we've seen in the years prior have now just been late contest slapping the backboard as the layup is going in. So, like, that's been a bit, I guess, frustrating. Frustrating is probably too strong. Like, it's not like I'm a Nets fan. But as someone who is just a fan of his and has seen him defend, and I have argued on this podcast, has defended at an all-defense level, like, to see this kind of slippage, even if the context makes sense, like, it's just kind of sad to see. And so I just hope that he's able to get healthier, he's able to play better. And moving forward with Brooklyn, or if they ultimately decide to move him at some point, I just want to see the best version of Nick Claxton again. We just haven't seen it in a while. It's just one of those things flowing under the radar because, again, I think macro sense, you kind of know Brooklyn is aiming to be at the top of the lottery if they can. They're in asset accumulation mode, et cetera. So it's easy to kind of just move them to the side. But, like, watching the Nets games, it's like, man, Nick Claxton's really good. And I would like to see him perform at a really high level because I've seen it before. So I'll just throw that in very quickly to kind of cap out my basketball thoughts.
Okay. Can I ask you a question I've asked you before?
Sure.
How have the drives from Jamal Murray been going of late, Nikias?
Well, Steve, very good. Very well.
He's starting to warm up a little bit, folks. I would notice that. I'm trying to fill some time as Nikias pulls the numbers up to support my thesis.
Yeah, because this is the thing I looked up yesterday as we were doing our Dunker Spot online watch party, which you should absolutely tap into those folks. But off the top of my head, I remember, like, as of the calendar year 2025, I think it was like 1.19 points per possession on any featuring a Jamal Murray drive. But as I get that filtered right now, it is indeed 1.19 points per possession on any trip featuring a Jamal Murray drive so far in January. That's really good and much better than it was earlier this season.
I'm just saying, folks, keep an eye on it. You're seeing a lot more of the wiggle, a lot more of the post-ups, a lot more of the juice in the Denver Nuggets. I think slept on feels like an annoying term to say, but as I said last week, they are moving in the right direction and they understand who they are. Their lineup feels stronger. You got to deal with Jokic and the defense. They're willing to throw some more switches out there. They're willing to not have to rotate every single time. So just keep an eye on them as they make a push here down the stretch.
There you go. Just quick correction on my front. I had to update slash refresh to include the game from yesterday. It is up to 1.2 points per possession now. So even better on the Jamal Murray front.
That's pretty doggone good, man. I have a question for you, Nikias.
What's up?
Is anyone paying attention to Jalen Green?
They should be.
In the month of January, 29.8 points, 52.8 from the field, 49.4 from three, 92.7 from the line. That's pretty good, right?
Yeah, let's say all these 30 pieces and just in general, the battles with Memphis have been really fun. But I will lay out for you. But yeah, Jalen Green's knocking down shots. It's a cool concept for this Houston team.
Scoot Henderson against the Bulls. Also, 25 points, 8 assists, 7 rebounds, 3 of 8 from 3. Against the Rockets, 21 points, 11 assists, 5 rebounds, 3 of 5 from 3. Against the Clippers, 16 points, 6 assists. 273 Against the Nets, 39.6 assists, 8 of 10 from 3. I think there are some people who may need to just go ahead and, you know, have to deliver a Scoot an apology. That seems to be not a thing people like to do these days, but we recognize he's improved a little bit. I think that's okay.
Yeah. Again, we talked about Scoot a little bit early in the pod season. Like, the process still feels a little bit better, even if it hasn't been like the capital L leap that many people are waiting for. And maybe that still comes. But the fact that the jumper does feel or it looks a little bit different, feels like a smoother process for him with the actual shot. And he's just been lighting it up from three. He is shooting 44% from three in the month of January, Steve. On like reasonable volume. So that's I think you take that if you're Portland.
Yeah, you got to take it. Also, Nikias.
What's up?
Are you ready to play a game?
Okay.
All right, we're going to play Is This Real?
Okay.
All right.
Shout out to the Magic.
So these are numbers from the month of January.
Okay.
I'm going to have you compare two teams and tell me which is more real.
Okay.
This is from NBA.com, not cleaning the glass.
Okay.
The Denver Nuggets in the month of January, fifth in offensive rating, fifth in defensive rating, or the Indiana Pacers, sixth in offensive rating, third in defensive rating. Which is more real?
Ooh, I would say probably the Nuggets is where I would lean, just because I have seen as recently as literally last season, the Nuggets be a top 10 defense. And so I think as Jokic gives better effort on that front, Christian Brown's been good. Aaron Gordon is back. Russell Westbrook has just been good defensively pretty much all year long. Peyton Watson, I hope he's okay, but like just swatting shots all over the place. Like I just feel a little bit better about the personnel. And also just, again, we have a larger sample of Denver ramping up the defense over the past couple of years compared to this Pacers sample. But again, check out the latest episode of the Dunk Spot where we had Caitlin Cooper on to talk about this Pacer defense. You will hear our thoughts. A quick plug. But I lean Nuggets here.
Okay. Next question. The Sacramento Kings, seventh in offensive rating, sixth in defensive rating, or the Milwaukee Bucks, 10th in offensive rating, seventh in defensive rating?
I have a related free throw for you after I answer this. That's a good one, man. I guess the Bucks for similar reasons. So we have seen Brook plus Giannis just equal elite defense before. And like Giannis has been very good, especially as of late. Brook Lopez has been very quiet all defense case for Brook Lopez this year, by the way. On my extended long list, but like he's still just towards top of the league in contested shots. Field goal percentage at the rim still low. Like he's still good at the defense thing. As you mentioned, more scheme mixing in, more screen versatility for him, being able to scram him out of switches and stuff. Like it's good stuff. I'll lean Bucks, but the Kings just look good under Doug Christie. They deserve a shot. They deserve a deeper dive on a later episode, but like they've been good. Can I cost you a quick free throw?
Sure.
Who has saved their team's defense more? Andrew Nembhard with Indiana or Keon Ellis with the Sacramento Kings?
I'm going to go Nembhard.
Okay.
I saw Keon Ellis do it last year.
Ah, I see. I see.
Nice try, pal.
You know, hey, worth the attempt.
All right. The Minnesota Timberwolves, eighth in offensive rating, 19th in defensive rating, or the New York Knicks, 12th in offensive rating, 23rd in defensive rating.
More real. I think more real is probably
Yeah, buddy.
That's a nasty one. Because like I was gonna say, shout out to this Julius Randle question. But I was gonna say the Knicks, just because like we had that early season sample where the defense was just not very good. Mm-hmm. And like I think we've had a longer sample of their defense not being good than the Wolves have had a sample of their defense being bad. Or for their offense being, well, I guess the offense has kind of been flirting around top 10 all year long. I guess I have more faith in the Wolves defense getting back on track than I do with the Knicks. I mean, I guess I'll lean Knicks.
Okay.
In this scenario.
Okay.
Great question.
More real. Miami, 19th in offensive rating, 13th in defensive rating. The Los Angeles Lakers, 15th in offensive rating, 24th in defensive rating. Oh, yeah, man.
I guess the Heat.
Tell me more.
I mean, just off the strength of, like, they were flirting around top 10 in offense, top 10 in defense. If they're slippage on either end, like, it makes sense they're kind of in the middle of the pack. And now you have the weird Jimmy stuff mixed in. They've also just had like really bad scoring droughts. We've also seen the defense kind of get carved sometimes. Okay. We've seen them hit a lot of level three. Like that makes more sense. The Lakers, I just don't know what they are. And I don't think they know what they are.
Okay. All right. The Golden State Warriors, 13th in offensive rating, 18th in defensive rating, or the New Orleans Pelicans, 11th in offensive rating, 17th in defensive rating.
Ooh. I guess by default is probably the Pelicans, just because, well, I was going to lean Pelicans because, like, this is a healthier version of them.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see like this being the healthy version of them. Obviously, it's not going to matter season wide because they are just so far down the standings in the West at this point. But like, I can at least see this version of the roster being this level of good or solid. With the Warriors, like Draymond in and out, Steph in and out, et cetera. Like I anticipate like one end of the floor is just going to improve with a consistent level of health for them. I would bank on the defense more than the offense, but like I anticipate like one of those just gets better as they're healthier and they're actually like playing for playoff contention.
Understood. There are three left, Nikias, so no worries.
Okay.
This one should be a fairly simple one for you. Right? The Los Angeles Clippers, 18th in offensive rating, first in defensive rating, or the Detroit Pistons, 17th in offensive rating, fourth in defensive rating.
It's going to be the Clippers for me.
There you go. I wouldn't even need a second shot.
Okay. Shout out to the Pistons, who also are deserving of a deeper dive at a later date.
Now, Nikias, you should always know when I give you a softball, there is a setup behind it.
I don't know. There's a curveball. What's up?
The Memphis Grizzlies, second in offensive rating, 22nd in defensive rating, or the Cleveland Cavaliers, third in offensive rating, 26th in defensive rating.
It's God. Yeah. That's sickening.
Yeah, buddy.
That's sickening. I am going to say, I say the Grizzlies more real in this aspect. I think both of their defenses are just much better than what they've recently shown, to be clear. But like, Cleveland being a bottom five defense is just not something that holds water. That holds less water for me than Memphis bottom 10. I don't believe either to be the case. But bottom five for Cleveland is more egregious, in my opinion.
I'm very proud of what I just did right there.
Yes,
and the last one, this is a special one just for you. Okay. Dealer's choice, however you want to answer it. The Houston Rockets, first in offensive rating, 14th in defensive rating, or the concept that the Charlotte Hornets are 8th in defensive rating while the Utah Jazz are 9th in defensive rating?
That's crazy. It's got to be Houston by default. Like, I have talked a lot about the switching for Utah and things. So, like, them putting together, like, a random stretch of holy crap, we're actually just not allowing good quality looks. Doesn't super surprise me, but like they're not that as a concept. And the Hornets, like, I've had my LaMelo quibbles about some of the effort stuff, just the possession by possession stuff. This isn't a new story for LaMelo, but like they do generally compete. And now you're adding Mark Williams back into the center of this, figuratively and literally. And like, didn't mention this on the all defense pod. And like, I don't think he's going to factor in just because of like the minutes threshold. You got to play at least 20 minutes for a game to register towards the 65 games played threshold, all this good stuff. But like, as I went through like the numbers dive and getting candidates and stuff together, like Cody Martin's name pops up quite a bit. And like, he has been solid on that end. I wouldn't call him a stopper. Like, the film is where I'm like, I'm not giving you all defense love. But like, they do have length. And now you're adding Mark Williams back in the center of the defense. You can kind of funnel stuff too. Like, I can see where they could put together a stretch too. But I'll lean Houston because like they've been flirting with a top 10 offense all year anyway, mostly driven by the transition stuff. I would like for Şengün to finish shots more consistently or just at his level. But like I can see the offensive upside for Houston. Şengün makes more of his shots. Jalen Green is now making his shots. And if they're still going to be a lot, you know, going to be transition driven on top of that because of how good their defense is, like I could see them putting that together. Like, that makes sense to me.
That's it.
Okay. There we go. Sickening round of questions from you, complimentary and derogatory because it made my brain hurt, but that's okay. That's okay. This is what you do. is why we appreciate you.
You're welcome.
There we go. Very quickly on the news front, speaking of the Charlotte Hornets, the Suns and the Hornets agreeing to a deal. Since the last time we spoke, the Suns receiving Nick Richards and a 2025 second round pick via the Denver Nuggets. And the Hornets receiving Josh Okogie and 3 second round picks. That is a 26 second from Denver, a 31 second from Denver, and a 31 second from Phoenix. Nick Richards, 21-11 in his Suns debut. Steve, how did you feel about the deal when it came in?
There's just absolutely no way that we got a Nick Richards for Josh Okogie swap, and you're asking me how I felt. How did you feel?
I was intrigued because, of course, I was going to be intrigued with like Charlotte Hornets slash Phoenix Suns matter. The Suns have been looking for don't do this to me, but no, the Suns have been looking for center help and or have been needing center help for most of the season. This has not been a great slash consistent showing for their big man room. This hasn't been the best season for Yusuf Nurkic. Mason Plumlee has filled in admirably for the most part, but it has felt like he's been overtasked in some aspects as he's had to cover for what the Nurk's experience has been. I've liked the Oso minutes, but like relying on him to a heavy degree is kind of tough.
Filled in this, admirably, but immediately overtasked.
No, I'm just saying, like you want him to be additive. You don't want him to. We need you to be this because our starting center isn't doing a bit. Like, that wasn't the Mason Plumlee expectation. You don't believe that was the Mason Plumlee expectation.
Folks, if you're watching on YouTube, please, please write down right now, comment what your response would be if your review was performs admirably, but is immediately overtasked. I just want to know what you would say back to that. Thank you.
At any rate, I do think he's been overtasked sometimes. You know, they have to do quite a bit to kind of hold the center room together because it has been a great stretch for Nurk. But either way, they add Nick Richards into the fold, and immediately I'm like, okay, he is going to screen well. I think some of the finishing is going to be better when he's in the game. I have no idea what to expect defensively on the Nick Richards front because as someone that has been watching a bunch of Charlotte Hornets games, if you are a longtime dunker, you remember when we first joined the channel, I was just giving a minute to lay out on the post All-Star break defense of the Charlotte Hornets a few years ago. But either way, that was Steve's reaction. That's a great callback, Steve. But in all seriousness, the Nick Richards experience defensively has been a bit of a roller coaster. I guess we can just start there. Because he's been asked to do quite a bit throughout his Charlotte tenure. If we want to focus in on the last year and a half for him, hey, Nick, we want you at the level very consistently. And like he does have the mobility to pull that off. I don't know if he had enough to do it as consistently as Charlotte was asking him to do. And this year it has been pretty much a complete role reversal. Not only do we want you in a drop, we want you all the way back here. We want you to wall off the rim, pretty much make it a one man zone. If necessary, but we want you back here. We don't want to strain this. We're going to force these guys to fight over funnel, contain, etc. And so I was looking at that and just like, I don't know. I think I made the tweet after the trade was announced. And I was like, I'm really intrigued to see where Bud settles in because Bud traditionally likes his bigs in a drop. We know what the Brook Lopez era in Milwaukee was, etc. But like, if it is going to be dropped for Nick Richards, what kind of presence at the rim is he actually going to provide? Because like even those results have been kind of inconsistent for him throughout his career. But also just in terms of the depth of the drop, how far is he going to be back? But if they plan on playing him all the way back like he was in Charlotte this year, that's going to be a lot of strain on Tyus Jones and Devin Booker and Bradley Beal when he's in, et cetera, et cetera. I'm just like, I don't know what that's going to look like. And like we recently talked about Ryan Dunn, where he's been good for them, but like I don't, he shouldn't be tasked with saving slash spearheading a defense in his first season. And like the screen navigation is good for a rookie and just good for a wing in general, but he's not elite. So like, that's a lot of strain on him. If they ask Nick Richards to play high up consistently, I don't know what that part is going to look like. But looking at the debut again, 21-11 in that one against Detroit, it was kind of like it was a drop, but it wasn't as deep as we saw on Charlotte, which felt like a nice middle ground. There were a few, let me get up to the level and then immediately drop back. And he seemed to fare pretty well on that. So if he's able to nail that consistently, that does give them a level of solid. in terms of defensive foundation for him. And then on the other end, he's going to generate extra opportunities. He's going to free all of those guys with his screens, either in pick and roll or with some of the off-ball stuff that they do. I think he's going to slide in nicely. He's going to be low maintenance on the offensive end, so you don't have to worry about feeding him on the block or anything like that. So, and with the cost being Josh Okogie in 3 seconds, you kind of need that to work just because I don't think the Suns have anything left at this point to trade on the pick front, at least now the second round pick front, outside of this 25 second that they got back from Denver. So like they need this to hit, but it is good that they didn't trade. Like, I guess Okogie was just it. He was in the rotation, but you get what I mean. He wasn't part of like their top four or five. And so like being able to bolster the big man room without giving up someone in that class of rotation player seems like a solid gamble for Phoenix. But just keeping an eye on the Nick Richards defense to see what that's going to look like there for this to work out for Phoenix. Obviously, you take 21-11, but that he's not going to average that for the Suns. So those are the immediate Phoenix thoughts anyway. Yeah,
I recalled you being very excited to see what coverage he would start in. And I, being me, told you it's going to be dropped, pal. And you didn't want to hear that from me. And then, so as I watched in the first screen when he was in, Cade Cunningham, Nick Richards, let me creep above the three-point line. Let me work to slide back, and Cade just hits a pull-up three. And I had a chuckle to myself. So I was like, I think the idea was clear for him to contain the drive. I think this was like, once you read money moves with Phoenix, things always start to make more sense. Like, oh, you made that, you saved that much money by making one single deal. I understand. But I think their big man room did need a lift. It's pretty clear how they feel about Nurk at this point. And, you know, as much as I will praise Mason Plumlee for what he's done, the rim contests are a little different these days. It's a lot of hands up. I'm not jumping, though, but, like, I'm here, and my hands are up. And I don't know if that works for a Phoenix team that hasn't had the most fun containing the drive or rotating consistently on the season. So I think what he brings is an element of weak side rotation. That's, hey, that's someone else that's not Kevin Durant who can impact a shot at the rim when rotating. That's a positive sign. I think the rim runs in transition should help. But also, he's a very enthusiastic screener for this team. Now, some of that might be new car smell, new team smell type beat, but he was trying to hit whoever he could hit, and I enjoyed that because Phoenix needs, one, guys to get open, and two, I kind of like the work he did on the short roll where let me pop, let me find someone, someone's got to be open. Like, okay, if you're going to have that here, that's going to be important. So I'm keeping an eye on it. I don't know how much it flips ultimately for the Suns, because I think they just need to defensively be more consistent, have more pressure, rotate better, and then offensively just play with more pace and tempo. Nick Richards can help with some of this, but they have to commit to doing it over and over and over again.
Got you. So there we go. So yeah, we got through a Nick Richards segment without me taking 87 minutes. I think you'd be proud of me.
Good job, man.
Thank you. That is all the validation I needed right there. All right. Well, back on the news front, we did get final All-Star returns on Thursday. We will get to learn who the starters are, I think, this Thursday. So excited to see how this is going to land. But as of the final fan return, at the very least, your East starters right now, LaMelo Ball, Donovan Mitchell. In the front court, it is Giannis, Jason Tatum, Karl-Anthony Towns. Not going to be any movement there. It is worth noting as we get into the reserve section, you know, post Thursday, as it is going to be the culmination of the media rank and the fan rank and where the coaches have them. Well, media rank, I got that right. I want to make sure I said my words correctly.
Did you say the fans, the media, and the players?
I think I said coaches instead of players. So that's, yeah.
Hey, Richie, leave it in.
No.
Just put a clown emoji face over me.
That's nasty work. Actually, we have the culmination of the fan, the media, and the player vote. These fan, even if you don't, you know, hit the starting group, like where you rank still matters. So at least noteworthy, Evan Mobley of the Cleveland Cavaliers did jump from 8th to 6th in the front court in the East. Out West, Shea and Steph Curry still your backcourt starters. Nikola Jokic, LeBron James, and Kevin Durant Your front court starters, LeBron passing Kevin Durant. So he's now second on the fan vote side. We'll see how that matters in relation to Victor Wembanyama, who is roughly 300,000 votes behind Kevin Durant. So that could get interesting depending on how this final week goes. Steph Curry, roughly 115,000 votes ahead of Luka Doncic. So those are your immediate takeaways, or immediate notes, excuse me, of the final All-Star returns. We're going to see what the starting units for each team ends up looking like. Also, a quick hat tip to Mark Datno and, I guess, an assistant to be named who will be coaching two of the All-Star teams representing the Western Conference.
One, I think these will be the lineups with LaMelo being the only person in danger, unless Wimby gets a massive split from the players in the media. Two, I have questions. So is it just the associate head coach? Is it the number one head coach, assistant coach? Does everyone still have to go? Like, so are you just secretly rooting that, hey, don't pick me?
I want to go on vacation, please.
Or do you just have to go anyways? And so you're an assistant to, like, how does that work out?
I would also like to know that.
See, I did the Nikias thing before you could.
We gotta press some letters, dial some numbers. Let's get some info, you know what I'm saying? Report back to the people. That's pretty neat. But there's that on the All-Star front. On the W side, as recording on a Monday, so by the time you see / hear this, it will be the 21st, which means teams and players can talk. Free agency officially begins. And come to agreements, contracts can be signed on February 1st, but January 21st marks the official start of free agency. So on the core designation front, which, if you aren't familiar, is essentially like the franchise tag in the NFL, it's just a one-year guaranteed deal. On the W side, one-year deal up to the Supermax if the player accepts the offer. Alyssa Thomas of the Connecticut Sun was core. Kelsey Mitchell getting the core designation from the Fever. Gabby Williams getting the core designation from the Seattle Storm. That is an interesting one, as I think it was Gabby herself saying, like, part of her calculus of returning to the W last season and who she would ultimately sign with was predicated on, hey, I would like to be a free agent. And so the Storm pressing the core button anyway is interesting. So we will see if that is those two agreeing to a different contract. If this now becomes, hey, I didn't want this. And Gabby has proven I'm fine with stepping away from the W and playing overseas. Does this become, hey, trade me somewhere now because I asked you not to do this and you did this anyway? So I am just really intrigued on what happens on the Gabby Williams front. Obviously one of the best perimeter defenders in basketball. The Storm rightfully want to keep her, but that was something that I didn't expect. And in terms of giving out qualifying offers and things, the Chicago Sky, you know, giving out the restricted free agent qualifying offer for Mikaela Onyewere, and Dana Evans, reserve contract right for Nikolina Micic, excuse me, and Kennedy Carter, who could be a restricted free agent, did not receive a qualifying offer. And so if she does not receive that by tomorrow or by the time you hear this, Kennedy Carter will be an unrestricted free agent instead of a restricted one, which certainly makes free agency a little bit more interesting, in my opinion, to see where Kennedy lands. She was one of the best scorers, one of the best guards in the W last season. Great comeback story. A lot was written and talked about her relationship with Teresa Weatherspoon and the trust that she got from her. I'm kind of intrigued by the Kennedy free agency. Because on one hand, like, the Sky not even giving, at least to this point as of recording, the Sky not giving out that restricted free agency offer sheet is interesting. And like, it means, at least for me, it makes me think, like, is there something on the back end that we just don't know about that would lead to that kind of decision? Because for me, if it was a matter of we just don't think you're going to be an on-court fit with the next iteration of this roster under Tyler, fine. We're going to give you this offer sheet, and now we're going to try to work out a trade so we get something back. That this has just turned into, we may not even offer you this, is where I'm like, is something going on? I don't know for sure. Like, I'm not reporting anything, but at least that's where I'm like, surely something's happened then, or maybe something's happened if the offer sheet wasn't even given. But if she is unrestricted, like, that is just a lot of scoring power that can fit in a lot of different places. So I am intrigued by the free agency there. Did you have any free agency thoughts before we move?
No, you're nailing it, bud.
Okay, fair enough. All right, last couple of things. Unrivaled did tip off this weekend, and boy, were those games fun. I enjoyed it. 3-on-3 content. Full court, but not a full court, different court dimensions. I really enjoyed it. I think it's 3 7-minute quarters, and then you have the winning score or Elam ending in their fourth quarter. Got to go plus 11 on that front. But, you know, getting the Fisa Collier versus Stewie to kind of tip things off for the league, I think that made a lot of sense. I like the way that these teams were constructed. I'll be having power rankings up every week on Bleach Report. If you want to read those, get more in-depth thoughts. We are going to do a deeper dive on Unrivaled, I think, on the next episode of the pod, just for time constraints. But wanted to get to some opening thoughts at the very least. One, Nafisa Collier is just really good at basketball. Like, we knew this based on the season that she had in the postseason run she just came off of. But her in a 3-on-3 setting to where she just gets to abuse switches all of the time. And if there's any kind of transition opportunity, and now it is like just a traditional center defending her now, she just gets to boogie in space. If it is a wing, she just kind of mosey her way to the rim and sprinkle in those short jumpers or get all the way to the basket. The Fisa Collier was very good. I think 27 in the opening game and then 31 in the second one, where she had a 25-point first half against the Rose. Like, they just did not have an answer for her. So the Fisa Collier, very good. Quick shout out to Alicia Gray as well of the Lunar Owls. Lunar Owls went 2-0 over the weekend, by the way. But quick shout out to Alicia Gray, who defended her tail off in this game, like made multiple big plays in the opening game against the Mist. Skylar Diggins-Smith getting the game-winning pull-up three in that matchup. Her and Jewel Lloyd went after it. Jewel Lloyd, big 30-point game in that opening game. But Alicia Gray, defending up in the post and getting crucial stops. She did a really good job on Breonna Stewart in particular late in that game. Feisty on the perimeter. I think the one thing I'd also note just on the Owls front, as I was going to need a larger sample to kind of figure out, okay, what are these teams trying to do differently schematically, et cetera. But like, one of the early things that stood out to me watching throughout the weekend, like, they are a high pickup team defensively. They are fine with missing the full court pressure. And so that part was fun for me. But as far as like the concept itself, again, very high paced, loves all the screening actions there. The free throw thing, just kind of speeding things up. You get one for the and one shot for a 2-point foul, one shot for a 3-shot foul. And those points are added. Like, it just makes games flow a lot smoother. So like, I just enjoyed it. Again, I have a lot more thoughts on Unrivaled, but I felt like the opening weekend was a success.
It was a massive success. It was very, very fun basketball. And I think as you saw more of it, you understood, one, the concepts of what they're trying to do, getting up and down, going back and forth, the differences on how you want to play. You know, you want to pick up quick, that's, you better keep the ball in front, because if you get beat and then there's not a ton of help behind you, if someone has to help, it's going to be over. But getting up and down, and okay, different players being able to attack and score in different ways, whether it's post up, whether it's screening actions, and the different teams that highlight what they do. You know, it's one thing to switch, but okay, is that Nafisa Collier popping out for a three? You saw different teams be able to use cutting actions to kind of punish teams in a different way, where we can execute and hurt you over and over and over again, throw it in the post, fake a split, cut, get a layup that way. Like, that's kind of the fun as it grows. And I think conceptually, one, the games are a breeze because there's limited interruptions. The fouls don't take very long. They continue to play. And then the target scores where, okay, we're really going to guard our yard now. And it was fascinating that on night one in the first two games, two comebacks were teams that had control. All of a sudden, now you're in the mud. Now you got to figure out how to score. And that, to me, is the essence of basketball. It's not always going to be pretty. It's not always going to be easy. And so you got enough space to operate. But now you look up and Sauerding and Smith has now made it her mission to make every shot. And, okay, we got to score here. Oh, we didn't score. You know, just like
she comes again.
And you knew she's going to take that last shot as soon as they got that stop. That's where it gets really fun. But different teams are able to do different things. And I think that's what was highlighted to me the most, especially in those first two games. Like, the dynamic as the Vinyl and the Rose played in game two. And it was like, well, here's some post-ups. Here's some different kind of sets. Here's some fouls. And, you know, it took them a little bit to find their rhythm. And then you saw the laces and just their execution, screen, roll, finish, two of the ball, finish, defense, push, finish, 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 ball swing, finish. And they, like, the way that they just as a team, even the game-winning basket that Kate Martin had, if you look at that clip, it's just beautiful basketball. It's just like, well, here's the ball back. Here's a screen. Get it to Alyssa Thomas in the post. And there's a cut, layup. It's a drill. So, like, that's good. It's more fun to get to know these teams, to know what they want to accomplish and how they want to hit. But it's been a blast to watch.
It's been a blast to watch indeed. That Laces Phantom game, 86-48.
Okay, now hold on. You gotta say a whole score out loud. All right. Jeez Louise.
I mean, considering everything else was close or at least single digits, like that was the literal one game that did not go that way. And it was Caleb McBride was here from the opening tip in that game. Caleb McBride.
Every single member of that team was there at the opening tip. Also, Stephanie Dolson should be on Team USA. I don't ever want to say it again.
You've seen it enough.
That's it. Also, training, shooting. Also, Chelsea Gray's passing is ungodly in this environment.
Yeah. Wraparounds, no look, over the head stuff. It's nutty.
You know what? I just want to give Angel Reese a quick salute because quick decisions, hitting people, looking to finish. It's been fun.
Yeah, it's been. You know, experimenting with the sidestep midi. It's knocked down a couple over the weekend. It's like, okay, this is where the skill work's tapping in. It's good stuff. Been tasked to switch quite a bit defensively, so she's having to work on space. We saw that with Chicago last year, so seeing her build on that, I understand. Last thing I want to say, just on like the X's and O's front, like going back to that Lunar Isles miss game, where again Skylar ended up calling game. It felt like that entire fourth quarter was, hey, we're just going to run Chicago action, and we're going to see what you do with it. Oh, you went under that handoff. Here's Skylar popping for a three from the right wing. Oh, you were trying to go under and also switch. Oh, no, that is a small person switched onto Nafisa Collier. Here is the ball. She is going to score and or you are going to have to foul her because now here's a mismatch. Oh, wait, here's Chicago again. Hey, that's Skylar Diggins-Smith from that same wing knocking down yet another three. It's very fun just to watch these kind of three-player actions evolve because we obviously see it a lot in 5-on-5 action across the W and the NBA. These actions. So seeing it with a 3-on-3 concept, you don't have that extra help back then. When it's run well, defenses are put in a really tough spot. So did enjoy that portion. Again, we will have deeper unrivaled thoughts on the next pod and just moving forward. That's going to be a fun league. A lot of big names in it. So
Nikias, you gotta go on the block.
Yeah, speaking of the block, we got a couple of YouTube comments. So thank you to those who commented on the latest episode. You can still watch that. All defense / depoy thoughts, et cetera. Bounced around the league a little bit as well. But first comment going to come from is Beast MRY, excuse me. I'm probably saying that wrong, but it's fine. I don't come to the segment always, but whenever I do, I always love it. Please know you're appreciated by us fans who like the game beyond the drama and the noise. So thank you for that. Second comment.
Thanks, Beast. Coming from,
there you go. Second comment coming from our dear pal Crab, commenting on our all defense discussion. Who says, no one has played better defense this year than Terry Rozier. Unfortunately, he plays that defense against his own team.
I can't laugh or I will cough.
Okay, well, hey. Do you want a special third one that will remove some laughter? Go back into appreciation so you can save your voice?
Yeah, let's go.
This one from our dear pal Drum. Absolutely love the insight Steve brings on the depoy topic with the idea of, okay, make your case for your guy. There's a lot of great defenders out there, and if you can back up your reasoning, I'm willing to hear you out on a lot of them. Always love to tune in and hear your guy's thoughts.
Oh, thanks. Heart emoji. I can't make one with my hands. Can you?
Not today.
We found a new challenge. Actually, that's my first free throw, potentially my only free throw. Would you rather make a heart emoji right now or do the Waffle House 24 waffles challenge?
Can I just say the concept of eating 24 Waffle House waffles is patently absurd. Well, with all due respect,
you could just stay for 24 hours if you wanted to.
That's also true. I guess it depends on which Waffle House you go to. You know, as someone that is in the South, like there are a lot of them. And so like there are some Waffle Houses that you absolutely could not do that challenge in. But there are some others that are like, you know what? You could probably pull that off. You know what I mean? Like, it's different. Like, I don't know. As someone that has frequented Atlanta quite a bit, like, there are some Waffle Houses in Atlanta that, hey, you can go. You might want to order to go, but you can go. There are also some Waffle Houses like 10 minutes apart. It was like, okay, cool. I could actually just sit down in here and just chill. Like, that's just kind of the nature of Waffle House as a concept. You know what? For the bit, I'll pick Waffle House. Okay. I mean, I haven't been to Waffle House in a long time.
That's no worries.
You'll cap it there.
Yeah, that was it. That's my only free throw.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough. My only free throw to you is: how upset are you going to be at my team rankings on the Unrivaled Power Ranking that will release on Thursday?
Oh, I already know it's gonna be some nasty business. Who did you? I think your sixth ranked team's gonna be second. Your fifth ranked team's gonna be first. Your first ranked team, the Phantom's, gonna be sixth. It's gonna be nasty work. I know what kind of shenanigans you're up to, buddy.
Hey, listen, you know, you're dealing with like two game samples.
So much you can, you know. That man crowned the Phantom, said versatility. They can do anything. I'm about to read this week. They can't do anything. I can't wait.
No, not that they can't. More that they didn't. You see, that opening game was just kind of tough. You know, it's still plenty of time. They weren't healthy. Also, I guess I should have mentioned on the Unrivaled front before we actually get out of here, just a couple of injury updates. Jackie Young did not play for the Laces. A knee injury on the injury report. So we'll see if that's long term or anything like that. And Marina Mabry. With a right calf strain, out 2 to 4 weeks for the Phantom. Natisha Heideman was signed. And then even Natisha Heideman popped up on the injury report. She was questionable with an illness. I was like, well, darn, this is it's getting kind of tough. But either way, keep an eye on Unrivaled. And with that, thank you for listening to and or watching this episode of The Dunker Spot. If you haven't already, please subscribe. We are on Apple, Spotify, RIP Google, Stitcher, Podbean, wherever you get your podcasts, you can find us. If you like the visual element here to play spliced in Steve's reactions to pretty much anything that I'm saying, you can catch us on this here YouTube channel, the Young Man to Three YouTube channel, every Tuesday. That is the day after Monday, the day before Wednesday. So check it out. Subscribe, like, share, comment, etc. You can follow me on Blue Sky and Twitter at NikiasNBA. You can follow Steve on the apps at SteveJones20. Join us for our online Dunker Spot watch parties. The link to the room is in the description. It is free to create a profile. If you have a lead pass subscription, you can sync that up. You can watch basketball games live with us. We're also splicing in some live play breakdowns. If something interesting happens or if something funny happens, we'll pull up a second screen. We'll slow-mo it. We'll talk about what popped out. Beyond that, a little bit of wrestling talk in the room. We do a lot of video game things.
Speed it up.
My fault. The Dunker Dynasty has reached bowl season. Your Charlotte 49ers going for a 3-peat. So we'll see how that goes. We have college football on stream. We'll do some Fortnite. I'm sure we're going to get some Marvel Rival streams at some point.
What are these 2K, things? Hit the hordes.
Video games. So if you want a cool place to hang out, click that link, create your profile, come rock with us. And with that, we will catch y'all later in the week.
Hey, that macaroni and cheese might have did something.